Approximately as many as the variety of fools among the galactic population, I should say. Namarti ignored that. Some people think the word dates back to the time when all humanity existed on but a single world. Itself a mythological concept. That's just as lunatic as the notion of supernatural influences. There never was one original human world. There would have to be, Andoran, said Namarti, annoyed. Human beings can't have evolved on different worlds and ended as a single species. Even so, there's no effective human world. It can't be located, it can't be defined, so it can't be spoken of sensibly. So it effectively doesn't exist. These gods, said Namarti, continuing to follow his own line of thought, are supposed to protect humanity and keep it safe, or at least to care for those portions of humanity that know how to make use of the gods. At a time when there was only one human world, it makes sense to suppose they would be particularly interested in caring for that one tiny world with a few people. They would care for such a world as though they were big brothers or parents. Very nice of them. I'd like to see them try to handle the entire empire. What if they could? What if they were infinite? What if the sun were frozen? What's the use of what if? I'm just speculating, just thinking. Haven't you ever let your mind wander freely? Do you always keep everything on a leash? I should imagine that's the safest way, keeping it on a leash. What does your wandering mind tell you, Chief? Namarti's eyes flashed at the other as though he suspected sarcasm, but Andoran's face remained good-natured and blank. Namarti said, What my mind is telling me is this. If there are gods, they must be on our side. Wonderful, if true. Where's the evidence? Evidence? Without the gods, it would just be a coincidence, I suppose, but a very useful one. Suddenly, Namarti yawned and sat down, looking exhausted. Good, thought Andoran. His galloping mind has finally wound itself down, and he may talk sense now. This matter of internal breakdown of the infrastructure, said Namarti, his voice distinctly lower. Andoran interrupted. You know, Chief, Kaspalov was not entirely wrong about this. The longer we keep it up, the greater the chance that Imperial forces will discover the cause. The whole program must sooner or later explode in our faces. Not yet. So far, everything is exploding in the Imperial face. The unrest on Trantor is something I can feel. He raised his hands, rubbing his fingers together. I can feel it. And we are almost through. We are ready for the next step. Andoran smiled humorlessly. I'm not asking for details, Chief. Kaspalov did, and look where that got him. I am not Kaspalov. It's precisely because you're not Kaspalov that I can tell you, and because I know something now I didn't then. I presume, said Andoran, only half believing what he was saying, that you intend a strike on the Imperial Palace grounds. Namarti looked up. Of course. What else is there to do? The problem, however, is how to penetrate the grounds effectively. I have my sources of information there, but they are only spies. I'll need men of action on the spot. To get men of action into the most heavily guarded region in all the galaxy will not be easy. Of course not. That's what has been giving me an unbearable headache till now. And then the gods intervened. And Doran said gently, it was taking all his self-restraint to keep from showing his disgust, I don't think we need a metaphysical discussion. What has happened, leaving the gods to one side? My information is that His Gracious and ever-to-be-beloved Emperor Cleon I has decided to appoint a new chief gardener. This is the first new appointee in nearly a quarter of a century. And if so, do you see no significance? And Doran thought for a moment. I am not a favorite of your gods. I don't see any significance. If you have a new chief gardener, Andoran, the situation is the same as having a new administrator of any other type. The same as if you had a new first minister or a new emperor. The new chief gardener will certainly want his own staff. He will force into retirement what he considers dead wood and will hire younger gardeners by the hundreds. That's possible. It's more than possible. It's certain. Exactly that happened when the present chief gardener was appointed, and the same when his predecessor was appointed, and so on. Hundreds of strangers from the outer worlds. Why from the outer worlds? Use your brains, if you have any, Andoran. What do Trantorians know about gardening when they've lived under domes all their lives, tending potted plants, zoos, and carefully arranged crops of grains and fruit trees? What do they know about life in the wild? Ah, now I understand. So there will be these strangers flooding the grounds. They will be carefully checked, I presume, but they won't be as tightly screened as they would be if they were Trantorians. And that means, surely, that we should be able to supply just a few of our own people with false identifications and get them inside. Even if some are screened out, a few might make it. A few must make it. Our people will enter, despite the super-tight security established since the failed coup in the early days of First Minister Selden. He virtually spat out the name, as he always did. We'll finally have our chance. Now it was Andoran who felt dizzy, as if he'd fallen into a spinning vortex. It seems odd for me to say so, Chief, but there is something to this God's business after all, because I have been waiting to tell you something that I now see fits in perfectly. Namarti stared at the other suspiciously and looked around the room, as though he suddenly feared for security. But such fear was groundless. The room was located deep in an old-fashioned residential complex and was well shielded. No one could overhear, and no one, even with detailed directions, could find it easily, nor get through the layers of protection provided by loyal members of the organization. Namarti said, What are you talking about? I've found a man for you, a young man, very naive, a quite likable fellow, the kind you feel you can trust as soon as you see him. He's got an open face, wide open eyes. He's lived in Dahl. He's an enthusiast for equality. He thinks Joronum was the greatest thing since Dahlite Coke Icers, and I'm sure we can easily talk him into doing anything for the cause. For the cause, said Namarti, whose suspicions were not in the least alleviated. Is he one of us? Actually, he's not one of anything. He's got some vague notions in his head that Joronum wanted sector equality. That was his lure, sure. It's ours, too, but the kid believes it. He talks about equality and popular participation in government, He even mentioned democracy. Namarti sniggered. In 20,000 years, democracy has never been used for very long without falling apart. Yes, but that's not our concern. It's what drives the young man. And I tell you, Chief, I knew we had our tool just about the moment I saw him, but I didn't know how we could possibly use him. Now I know. We can get him onto the Imperial Palace grounds as a gardener. How? Does he know anything about gardening? No, I'm sure he doesn't. He's never worked at anything but unskilled labor. He's operating a hauler right now, and I think that he had to be taught how to do that. Still, if we can get him in as a gardener's helper, if he just knows how to hold a pair of shears, then we've got it. Got what? Got someone who can approach anyone we wish, and do so without raising the flutter of a suspicion, and get close enough to strike. I'm telling you, he simply exudes a kind of honorable stupidity, a kind of foolish virtue that inspires confidence. And he'll do what we tell him to do? Absolutely. How did you meet this person? It wasn't I. It was Manella who really spotted him. Who? Manella. Manella Dubanka. Oh, that friend of yours. Namarti's face twisted into a look of prissy disapproval. She's the friend of many people, said Andoran tolerantly. That's one of the things that makes her so useful. She can weigh a man quickly, and with very little to go on. She talked to this fellow because she was attracted to him at sight, and I assure you that Manella is not one who is usually attracted by anything but the bottom line. So you see, this man is rather unusual. She talked to this fellow, his name is Planchette, by the way, and then told me, I have a live one for you, Gleb. I'll trust her on the matter of live ones any day of the week. Namarti said slyly, And what do you think this wonderful tool of yours would do once he had the run of the grounds, eh, Andoran? Andoran took a deep breath. What else? If we do everything right, he will dispose of our dear Emperor Cleon, first of that name, for us. Namarti's face blazed into anger. What? Are you mad? Why should we want to kill Cleon? He's our hold on the government. He's the facade behind which we can rule. He's our passport to legitimacy. Where are your brains? We need him as a figurehead. He won't interfere with us, and we'll be stronger for his existence. Andoran's fair face turned blotchy red, and his good humor finally exploded. What do you have in mind, then? What are you planning? I'm getting tired of always having to second-guess. Namarti raised his hand. All right. All right. Calm down. I meant no harm. But think of it, will you? Who destroyed Joranum? Who destroyed our hopes 10 years ago? It was that mathematician. And it is he who rules the empire now with his idiotic talk about psychohistory. Cleon is nothing. It is Harry Seldon we must destroy. It is Harry Seldon whom I've been turning into an object of ridicule with these constant breakdowns. The miseries they entail are placed at his doorstep. It is all being interpreted as his inefficiency, his incapacity. There was a trace of spittle in the corners of Namarti's mouth. When he's cut down, there will be a cheer from the Empire that will drown out every holovision report for hours. It won't even matter if they know who did it. He raised his hand and let it drop, as if he were plunging a knife into someone's heart. We will be looked upon as heroes of the Empire, as saviors. Eh? Eh? Do you think your youngster can cut down Harry Seldon? Andorran had recovered his sense of equanimity, at least outwardly. I'm sure he would, he said with forced lightness. For Cleon, he might have some respect. The Emperor has a mystical aura about him, as you know. He stressed the U faintly, and Namarti scowled. He would have no such feelings about Seldon. Inwardly, however, Andorran was furious. This was not what he wanted. He was being betrayed. Chapter 14. Manella brushed the hair out of her eyes and smiled up at Rach. I told you it wouldn't cost you any credits. Rach blinked and scratched at his bare shoulder. But are you going to ask me for some now? She shrugged and smiled rather impishly. Why should I? Why shouldn't you? Because I'm allowed to take my own pleasure sometimes. With me? There's no one else here. There was a long pause, and then Manella said soothingly, Besides, you don't have that many credits anyway. How's the job? Rach said, Ain't much, but better than nothing. Lots better. Did you tell that guy to get me one? Manella shook her head slowly. You mean Gleb Andorran? I didn't tell him to do anything. I just said he might be interested in you. Is he going to be annoyed because you and I... Why should he? None of his business, and none of yours either. What's he do? I mean, what does he work at? I don't think he works at anything. He's rich. He's a relative of the old mayor's. Of why? Right. He doesn't like the imperial government. None of those old mayor people do. He says Cleon should... She stopped suddenly and said, I'm talking too much. Don't you go repeating anything I say. Me? I ain't heard you say nothing at all, and I ain't going to. All right. But what about Andorran? Is he high up in Joranumite business? Is he an important guy there? I wouldn't know. Don't he ever talk about that kind of stuff? Not to me. Oh, said Rach, trying not to sound annoyed. Manella looked at him shrewdly. Why are you so interested? I want to get in with them. I figure I'll get higher up that way. Better job. More credits, you know. Maybe Andorran will help you. He likes you. I know that much. Could you make him like me more? I can try. I don't know why he shouldn't. I like you. I like you more than I like him. Thank you, Manella. I like you, too. A lot. He ran his hand down the side of her body and wished ardently that he could concentrate more on her and less on his assignment. Chapter 15. Gleb Andorran, said Harry Seldon, wearily, rubbing his eyes. And who is he? Asked Doris Van Abbeley, her mood as cold as it had been every day since Rach had left. Until a few days ago, I never heard of him, said Seldon. That's the trouble with trying to run a world of 40 billion people. You never hear of anyone, except for the few who obtrude themselves on your notice. With all the computerized information in the world, Trantor remains a planet of anonymities. We can drag up people with their reference numbers and their statistics. But whom do we drag up? Add 25 million outer worlds, And the wonder is that the Galactic Empire has remained a working phenomenon for all these millennia. Frankly, I think it has existed only because it very largely runs itself. And now it is finally running down. So much for philosophizing, Harry, said Dors. Who is this Andoran? Someone I admit I ought to have known about. I managed to cajole the security establishment into calling up some files on him. He's a member of the Wyan Mayorality family, the most prominent member, in fact, so the security people have kept tabs on him. They think he has ambitions, but is too much of a playboy to do anything about them. And is he involved with the Joranumites? Selden made an uncertain gesture. I'm under the impression that the security establishment knows nothing about the Joranumites. That may mean that the Joranumites no longer exist, or that if they do, they are of no importance. It may also mean that the security establishment just isn't interested. Nor is there any way in which I can force it to be interested. I'm only thankful the officers give me any information at all, and I am the First Minister. Is it possible that you're not a very good First Minister? Said Dors dryly. That's more than possible. It's probably been generations since there's been an appointee less suited to the job than myself. But that has nothing to do with the security establishment. It's a totally independent arm of the government. I doubt that Cleon himself knows much about it, though in theory the security officers are supposed to report to him through their director. Believe me, if we only knew more about the security establishment, we'd be trying to stick its actions into our psychohistorical equations, such as they are. Are the security officers on our side, at least? I believe so, but I can't swear to it. And why are you interested in this, what's his name? Gleb Andorin, because I received a roundabout message from Reach. Dora's eyes flashed. Why didn't you tell me? Is he all right? As far as I know, but I hope he doesn't try any further messages. If he's caught communicating, he won't be all right. In any case, he has made contact with Andorin. And the Joranumites, too? I don't think so. It would sound unlikely, for the connection is not something that would make sense. The Joranumite movement is predominantly lower class, a proletarian movement, so to speak. And Andoran is an aristocrat of aristocrats. What would he be doing with the Joranumites? If he's of the Wyan mayoralty family, he might aspire to the imperial throne, might he not? They've been aspiring for generations. You remember Rachel, I trust. She was Andoran's aunt. Then he might be using the Joranumites as a stepping stone, don't you think? If they exist. And if they do, and if a stepping stone is what Andoran wants, I think he'd find himself playing a dangerous game. The Joranumites, if they exist, would have their own plans, and a man like Andoran may find he's simply riding a Greti. What's a Greti? Some extinct animal of a ferocious type, I think. It's just a proverbial phrase back on Helicon. If you ride a Greti, you find you can't get off, for then it will eat you. Selden paused. One more thing. Rach seems to be involved with a woman who knows Andoran, and through whom he thinks he may get important information. I'm telling you this now so that you won't accuse me afterward of keeping anything from you. Dors frowned. A woman? One, I gather, who knows a great many men who will talk to her unwisely sometimes under intimate circumstances. One of those? Her frown deepened. I don't like the thought of Reach. Come, come. Rach is 30 years old and undoubtedly has much experience. You can leave this woman, or any woman, I think, safely to Rach's good sense. He turned toward Doris with a look so worn, so weary, and said, "Do you think I like this? Do you think I like any of this?" And Doris could find nothing to say. Chapter 16. Gamboldine de Marty was not, at even the best of times, noted for his politeness and suavity, and the approaching climax of a decade of planning had left his disposition sour. He rose from his chair with some agitation and said, "You've taken your time getting here, Andoran." Andoran shrugged. "But I'm here. And this young man of yours, this remarkable tool that you're touting, where is he?" "He'll be here eventually." "Why not now?" Andoran's rather handsome head seemed to sink a bit, as though he were lost in thought or coming to a decision. And then he said abruptly, "I don't want to bring him until I know where I stand."
"What does that mean?"
"Simple words in galactic standard. How long has it been your aim to get rid of Harry Seldon?"
"Always. Always. Is that so hard to understand? We deserve revenge for what he did to Jojo. Even if he hadn't done that, since he's the First Minister, we'd have to put him out of the way."
"But it's Cleon. Cleon who must be brought down. If not only he, then at least he, in addition to Seldon."
"Why does a figurehead concern you?"
"You weren't born yesterday. I've never had to explain my part in this, because you're not so ignorant a fool as not to know. What can I possibly care about your plans if they don't include a replacement on the throne?"
Namarty laughed. "Of course. I've known for a long time that you look upon me as your footstool, your way of climbing up to the imperial throne."
"Would you expect anything else?"
"Not at all. I will do the planning, take the chances, and then, when all is quite done, you gather in the reward. It makes sense, doesn't it?"
"Yes, it does make sense. For the reward will be yours, too. Won't you become the First Minister? Won't you be able to count on the full support of a new emperor, one who is filled with gratitude?" "Won't I be?" And his face twisted with irony as he spat out the words. "The new figurehead?"
"Is that what you plan to be, a figurehead?"
"I plan to be the emperor. I supplied advances of credit when you had none. I supplied the cadre when you had none. I supplied the respectability you needed to build a large organization here in Y. I can still withdraw everything I've brought in."
"I don't think so."
"Do you want to risk it? Don't think you can treat me the way you treated Kaspalov either. If anything happens to me, Y will become uninhabitable for you and yours, and you will find that no other sector will supply you with what you need."
Namarty sighed. "Then you insist on having the Emperor killed."
"I didn't say killed. I said brought down. The details I leave to you."
This last statement was accompanied with an almost dismissive wave of the hand, a flick of the wrist, as if Andoran were already sitting on the imperial throne.
"And then you'll be emperor?"
"Yes."
"No, you won't. You'll be dead. And not at my hands either. Andoran, let me teach you some of the facts of life. If Cleon is killed, then the matter of the succession comes up. And to avoid civil war, the Imperial Guard will at once kill every member of the Wyan mayoral family they can find, you first of all. On the other hand, if only the First Minister is killed, you will be safe."
"Why?"
A first minister is only a first minister. They come and go. It is possible that Cleon himself may have grown tired of him and arranged the murder. Certainly we would see to it that rumors of this sort are spread. The Imperial Guard would hesitate, and would give us a chance to put the new government into place. Indeed, it is quite possible that they themselves would be grateful for the end of Selden.
And with the new government in place, what am I to do? Keep on waiting? Forever?
No. Once I'm First Minister, there will be ways of dealing with Cleon. I may even be able to do something with the Imperial Guard, and even with the security establishment, and use them all as my instruments. I will then manage to find some safe way of getting rid of Cleon and replacing him with you.
Andoran burst out, Why should you?
Andoran burst out, Why should you?
Namarti said, What do you mean, why should I?
You have a personal grudge against Selden. Once he is gone, why should you run unnecessary risks at the highest level? You will make your peace with Cleon, and I will have to retire to my crumbling estate and my impossible dreams. And perhaps, to play it safe, you will have me killed.
Namarti said, No, Cleon was born to the throne. He comes from several generations of emperors, the proud Entun dynasty. He would be very difficult to handle, a plague. You, on the other hand, would come to the throne as a member of a new dynasty, without any strong ties to tradition, for the previous Wyan emperors were, you will admit, totally undistinguished. You will be seated on a shaky throne, and will need someone to support you. Me. And I will need someone who is dependent upon me, and whom I can therefore handle. You. Come, Andoran, ours is not a marriage of love, which fades in a year. It is a marriage of convenience, which can last as long as we both live. Let us trust each other.
You swear I will be emperor?
What good would swearing do if you couldn't trust my word? Let us say I would find you an extraordinarily useful emperor, and I would want you to replace Cleon as soon as that can safely be managed. Now, introduce me to this man you think will be the perfect tool for your purposes.
Very well. And remember what makes him different. I have studied him. He's a not very bright idealist. He will do what he's told, unconcerned by danger, unconcerned by second thoughts. And he exudes a kind of trustworthiness, so that his victim will trust him, even if he has a blaster in his hand.
I find that impossible to believe.
Wait till you meet him, said Andoran.
Chapter 17 Rach kept his eyes down. He had taken a quick look at Namarti, and it was all he needed. He had met the man 10 years before, when Rach had been sent to lure Jojo Joranum to his destruction, and one look was more than enough. Namarti had changed little in 10 years. Anger and hatred were still the dominant characteristics one could see in him, or that Rach could see in him at any rate, for he realized he was not an impartial witness. And those seemed to have marinated him into leathery permanence. His face was a trifle more gaunt. His hair was flecked with gray. But his thin-lipped mouth was set in the same harsh line, and his dark eyes were as brilliantly dangerous as ever. That was enough, and Rach kept his eyes averted. Namarti, he felt, was not the type of person who would take to someone who could stare him straight in the face. Namarti seemed to devour Rach with his own eyes. But the slight sneer his face always seemed to wear remained. He turned to Andoran, who stood uneasily to one side, and said, quite as though the subject of conversation were not present,
This is the man, then.
Andorin nodded, and his lips moved in a soundless, "Yes, Chief."
Namarti said to Raich abruptly, "Your name?"
"Planchet, sir."
"You believe in our cause?"
"Yes, sir."
He spoke carefully, in accordance with Andoran's instructions. "I am a Democrat, and want greater participation of the people in the governmental process."
Namarti's eyes flicked in Andoran's direction. "A speechmaker."
He looked back at Raich. "Are you willing to undertake risks for the cause?"
"Any risk, sir."
"You will do as you are told. No questions, no hanging back."
"I will follow orders."
"Do you know anything about gardening?"
Raich hesitated.
"No, sir."
"You're a Trantorian, then, born under the dome?"
"I was born in Millimaru, sir, and I was brought up in Dahl."
"Very well," said Namarti. Then to Andorin, "Take him out and deliver him temporarily to the men waiting there. They will take good care of him. Then come back, Andorin. I want to speak to you."
When Andorin returned, a profound change had come over Namarti. His eyes were glittering, and his mouth was twisted into a feral grin.
"Andorin," he said, "the gods we spoke of the other day are with us to an extent I couldn't have imagined."
"I told you the man was suitable for our purposes."
"Far more suitable than you think. You know, of course, the tale of how Harry Seldon, our revered First Minister, sent his son, or foster son, rather, to see Joranum and to set the trap into which Joranum, against my advice, fell."
"Yes," said Andorin, nodding wearily. "I know the story."
He said it with the air of one who knew the story entirely too well.
"I saw that boy only that once, but his image burned into my brain. Do you suppose that 10 years' passage and false heels and a shaved mustache could fool me? That planchet of yours is Raich, the foster son of Harry Seldon."
Andorin paled and held his breath for a moment. He said,
"Are you sure of that, Chief?"
"As sure as I am that you're standing here in front of me, and that you have introduced an enemy into our midst."
"I had no idea."
"Don't get nervous," said Namarti. "I consider it the best thing you have ever done in your idle aristocratic life. You have played the role that the gods have marked out for you. If I had not known who he was, he might have fulfilled the function for which he was undoubtedly intended, to be a spy in our midst, and an informant of our most secret plans. But since I know who he is, it won't work that way. Instead, we now have everything."
Namarti rubbed his hands together in delight, and haltingly, as if he realized how far out of character it was for him, he smiled and laughed.
Chapter 18.
Manella said thoughtfully, "I guess I won't be seeing you any more, Planchet."
Raich was drying himself after his shower.
"Why not?"
"Gleb Andorin doesn't want me to."
"Why not?"
Manella shrugged her smooth shoulders.
"He says you have important work to do, and no more time to fool around. Maybe he means you'll get a better job."
Raich stiffened.
"What kind of work? Did he mention anything in particular?"
"No, but he said he would be going to the Imperial Sector."
"Did he? Does he often tell you things like that?"
You know how it is, Planchet. When a fellow's in bed with you, he talks a lot.
I know, said Rach, who was always careful not to. What else does he say?
Why do you ask?
She frowned a bit.
He always asks about you, too. I noticed that about men. They're curious about each other. Why is that, do you suppose?
What do you tell him about me?
Not much. Just that you're a very decent sort of guy. Naturally, I don't tell him that I like you better than I like him. That would hurt his feelings. And it might hurt me, too.
Rach was getting dressed. So, it's goodbye, then.
For a while, I suppose. Gleb may change his mind. Of course, I'd like to go to the Imperial Sector, if he'd take me. I've never been there.
Rach almost slipped, but he managed to cough, then said, I've never been there either.
It's got the biggest buildings and the nicest places and the fanciest restaurants. And that's where the rich people live. I'd like to meet some rich people. Besides Gleb, I mean.
Rach said, I suppose there's not much you can get out of a person like me.
You're all right. You can't think of credits all the time. But you've got to think of them some of the time, especially since I think Gleb is getting tired of me.
Rach felt compelled to say, No one could get tired of you. And then found a little to his own confusion that he meant it.
Manella said, That's what men always say, but you'd be surprised. Anyway, it's been good, you and I, Planchet. Take care of yourself. And who knows, we may see each other again.
Rach nodded and found himself at a loss for words. There was no way in which he could say or do anything to express his feelings. He turned his mind in other directions. He had to find out what the Namarti people were planning. If they were separating him from Manella, the crisis must be rapidly approaching. All he had to go on was that odd question about gardening. Nor could he get any further information back to Selden. He had been kept under close scrutiny since his meeting with Namarti, and all avenues of communication were cut off. Surely another indication of an approaching crisis. But if he were to find out what was going on only after it was done, and if he could communicate the news only after it was no longer news, he would have failed. Chapter 19. Harry Selden was not having a good day. He had not heard from Rach since his first communique. He had no idea what was happening. Aside from his natural concern for Rach's safety, surely he would hear if something really bad had happened, there was his uneasiness over what might be planned. It would have to be subtle. A direct attack on the palace itself was totally out of the question. Security there was far too tight. But if so, what else could be planned that would be sufficiently effective? The whole thing was keeping him awake at night and distracted by day. The signal light flashed.
First Minister, your 2 o'clock appointment, sir.
What 2 o'clock appointment is this?
Mandel Gruber, the gardener. He has the necessary certification.
Selden remembered.
Yes. Send him in.
This was no time to see Gruber, but he had agreed to it in a moment of weakness. The man had seemed distraught. A First Minister should not have such moments of weakness, but Selden had been Selden long before he had become First Minister.
Come in, Gruber, he said kindly.
Gruber stood before him,
head ducking mechanically, eyes darting this way and that. Selden was quite certain the gardener had never been in any room as magnificent as this one, and he had the bitter urge to say, "Do you like it? Please take it. I don't want it." But he only said, "What is it, Gruber? Why are you so unhappy?" There was no immediate answer. Gruber merely smiled vacantly. Selden said, "Sit down, man, right there in that chair." "Oh, no, First Minister. It would not be fitting. I'll get it dirty." "If you do, it will be easy to clean. Do as I say." "Good. Now, just sit there a minute or two and gather your thoughts. Then, when you are ready, tell me what's the matter." Gruber sat silent for a moment, then the words came out in a panting rush. "First Minister, it is Chief Gardener I am to be. The Blessed Emperor himself told me so." "Yes, I have heard of that. But that surely isn't what is troubling you. Your new post is a matter of congratulations, and I do congratulate you. I may even have contributed to it, Gruber. I have never forgotten your bravery at the time I was nearly killed, and you can be sure I mentioned it to His Imperial Majesty. It is a suitable reward, Gruber, and you would deserve the promotion in any case, for it is quite clear from your record that you are fully qualified for the post. So now that that's out of the way, tell me what is troubling you." "First Minister, it is the very post and promotion that's troubling me. It is something I cannot manage, for I am not qualified." "We are convinced you are." Gruber grew agitated. "And is it in an office I will have to sit? I can't sit in an office. I could not go out in the open air and work with the plants and animals. I would be in prison, First Minister." Selden's eyes opened wide. "No such thing, Gruber. You needn't stay in the office longer than you have to. You could wander around the grounds freely, supervising everything. You will have all the outdoors you want, and you will merely spare yourself the hard work." "I want the hard work, First Minister, and it's no chance at all they will let me come out of the office. I have watched the present Chief Gardener. He couldn't leave his office, though he wanted to, ever so. There is too much administration, too much bookkeeping. Sure, if he wants to know what is going on, we must go to his office to tell him. He watches things on holovision," he said with infinite contempt. "As though you can tell anything about growing, living things from pictures. It is not for me, First Minister." "Come, Gruber, be a man. It's not all that bad. You'll get used to it. You'll work your way in slowly." Gruber shook his head. "First off, at the very first, I will have to deal with all the new gardeners. I'll be buried." Then, with sudden energy, "It is a job I do not want and must not have, First Minister." "Right now, Gruber, perhaps you don't want the job. But you're not alone. I'll tell you that right now I wish I were not First Minister. This job is too much for me. I even have a notion that there are times when the Emperor himself is tired of his imperial robes. We're all in this galaxy to do our work, and the work isn't always pleasant." "I understand that, First Minister, but the Emperor must be Emperor, for he was born to that. And you must be First Minister, for there is no one else who can do the job. But in my case, it is just Chief Gardener we are ruminating upon. There are 50 gardeners in the place who could do it as well as I could, and who wouldn't mind the office. You say that you spoke to the Emperor about how I tried to help you.
Can't you speak to him again and explain that if he wants to reward me for what I did, he can leave me as I am?"
Selden leaned back in his chair and said solemnly, "Gruber, I would do that for you if I could. But I must explain something to you, and I can only hope that you will understand it. The Emperor, in theory, is absolute ruler of the Empire. In actual fact, there is very little he can do. I run the Empire right now much more than he does, and there is very little I can do, too. There are millions and billions of people at all levels of government, all making decisions, all making mistakes. Some acting wisely and heroically, some acting foolishly and thievishly. There's no controlling them. Do you understand me, Gruber?"
"I do, but what has this to do with my case?"
"Because there is only one place where the Emperor is really absolute ruler, and that is over the imperial grounds. Here, his word is law, and the layers of officials beneath him are few enough for him to handle. For him to be asked to rescind a decision he has made in connection with the Imperial Palace grounds would be to invade the only area that he would consider inviolate. If I were to say, 'Take back your decision on Gruber, Your Imperial Majesty,' he would be much more likely to relieve me of my duties than to take back his decision. That might be a good thing for me, but it wouldn't help you any."
Gruber said, "Does that mean there's no way things can be changed?"
"That's exactly what it means. But don't worry, Gruber, I'll help you all I can. I'm sorry, but now I have really spent all the time with you that I am able to spare."
Gruber rose to his feet. In his hands, he twisted his green gardening cap. There was more than a suspicion of tears in his eyes.
"Thank you, First Minister. I know you would like to help. You're a good man, First Minister."
He turned and left, sorrowing. Selden looked after him thoughtfully and shook his head.
"Multiply Gruber's woes by a quadrillion, and you would have the woes of all the people of the 25 million worlds of the Empire. And how was he, Selden, to work out salvation for all of them when he was helpless to solve the problem of one single man who had come to him for help? Psychohistory could not save one man. Could it save a quadrillion?" He shook his head again, checked the nature and time of his next appointment, and then suddenly stiffened. He shouted into his communications wire in sudden wild abandon, quite unlike his usually strict control, "Get that gardener back. Get him back here right now."
Chapter 20. "What's this about new gardeners?" exclaimed Selden. This time he did not ask Gruber to sit down. Gruber's eyes blinked rapidly. He was in a panic at having been recalled so unexpectedly.
"The new gardeners?" he stammered.
"You said, 'all the new gardeners.' Those were your words. What new gardeners?"
Gruber was astonished. "Sure, if there is a new chief gardener, there will be new gardeners. It is the custom."
"I have never heard of this."
"The last time we had a change of chief gardeners, you were not First Minister. It is likely you were not even on Trantor."
"But what's it all about?"
"Well, gardeners are never discharged. Some die, some grow too old and are pensioned off and replaced. Still, by the time a new chief gardener is ready for his duties, at least half the staff is aged and beyond their best years. They are all pensioned off generously, and new gardeners are brought in."
"For youth?"
"Partly, and partly because by that time there are usually new plans for the gardens, and it is new ideas and new schemes we must have. There are almost 500 square kilometers in the gardens and parklands, and it usually takes some years to reorganize it. And it is myself who will have to supervise it all. Please, First Minister, Gruber was gasping, surely a clever man like your own self can find a way to change the Blessed Emperor's mind. Selden paid no attention. His forehead was creased in concentration. Where do the new gardeners come from? There are examinations on all the worlds. There are always people waiting to serve as replacements. They'll be coming in by the hundreds in a dozen batches. It will take me a year at the least. From where do they come? From where? From any of a million worlds. We want a variety of horticultural knowledge. Any citizen of the Empire can qualify. From Trantor too? No, not from Trantor. There is no one from Trantor in the gardens. His voice grew contemptuous. You can't get a gardener out of Trantor. The parks they have here under the dome aren't gardens. They are potted plants, and the animals are in cages. Trantorians, poor specimens that they are, know nothing about open air, free water, and the true balance of nature. All right, Gruber, I will now give you a job. It will be up to you to get me the names of every new gardener scheduled to arrive over the coming weeks. Everything about them. Name, world, reference number, education, experience, everything. I want it all here on my desk just as quickly as possible. I'm going to send people to help you, people with machines. What kind of a computer do you use? Only a simple one for keeping track of plantings and species and things like that. All right. The people I send will be able to do anything you can't do. I can't tell you how important this is. If I should do this... Gruber, this is not the time to make bargains. Fail me, and you will not be chief gardener. Instead, you will be discharged without a pension. Alone again, Selden barked into his communication wire, "Cancel all appointments for the rest of the afternoon." He then let his body flop in his chair, feeling every bit of his 50 years, and feeling his headache worsen. For years, for decades, security had been built up around the Imperial Palace grounds. Thicker, more solid, more impenetrable, as each new layer and each new device was added. And every once in a while, hordes of strangers were let into the grounds. No questions asked, probably, but one. Can you garden? The stupidity involved was too colossal to grasp, and he had barely caught it in time. Or had he? Was he even now too late? Chapter 21. Gleb and Doran gazed at Namarty through half-closed eyes. He never liked the man. But there were times when he liked him less than he usually did, and this was one of those times. Why should Andoran, a Wyan of royal birth, that's what it amounted to after all, have to work with this parvenu, this near-psychotic paranoid? Andoran knew why, and he had to endure. Even when Namarty was once again in the process of telling the story of how he had built up the movement during a period of 10 years to its present pitch of perfection. Did he tell this to everyone, over and over? Or was it just Andoran who was his chosen vessel? Namarty's face seemed to shine with malignant glee as he said, in an odd sing-song, as though it were a matter of rote, "Year after year, I worked on those lines, even through hopelessness and uselessness, building an organization,
chipping away at confidence in the government, creating and